Hi, Dan.
Hi, Jason.
Oh, you know, one of the things that I talk about on this podcast is that sometimes the work I do is below the waterline and doesn't emerge. And I had one of those days yesterday where I wrote the member post that went up about how I bought a new Apple TV and it caused me to buy a brand new receiver for my home theater.
Trickle-down problems.
Oh, I love it when that happens. Where you're like, oh, you know, this could be, I could do so much
more. I had
more.
That same exact moment, Jason, and I haven't done it yet, but when I move into the new house, I will probably, I've been thinking about buying a Sonos Arc. Because that also has some of those features that you wanted.
Right. Yeah, I have speakers in my ceiling and stuff, for surround speakers in my ceiling.
I could have done it, but I decided it was too much
for our house
right now.
Yeah, so when we had the ceiling kind of open because we were remodeling, like, I don't know what that was now. 9 years ago, something like that. We did that. And so I've got those speakers back there, and I've got a center channel, and I got, right, like, so it's like, okay, I want a 5.1 thing, but that my receiver is 15 years old or something. Doesn't do anything. Doesn't support ARC. Doesn't support anything like that. So I see that power button on the Apple TV remote, and I'm like, God, wouldn't it be nice if I could put the Logitech Harmony remote thing, which we kind of only use for the most part just to switch between devices. Could I make it go away? Because, you know, Logitech's making it go away. Discontinued it. And having this idea that if you have a remote for a device and the device is connected to everything else via ARC, you can have it say, hey, turn everything on and turn everything off. But, and I could do it with the TV, but not my receiver. Like, so the sound would continue, everything else would turn off. So I bought a new one that's got like AirPlay and Bluetooth, and it doesn't do HomeKit, but there's a plugin in HomeBridge that puts it on in HomeKit. And all of a sudden, I swapped that in for the old one, and everything works pretty well. And I actually think, and I'm sure John Syracuse could tell me how to do this, but I actually think I don't even need the third remote that I'm using, which is a Philips smart Hue remote, basically, that I've retasked to do very simple things like, you know, turn on TiVo, turn off TiVo, because my TiVo doesn't do ARC. And John Syracuse could probably tell me, because I think I might be able to set up the TiVo remote to put out a signal that says to the receiver, turn on and switch to this input. And if I could do that, then it will turn on the TV because of ARC. And I might have something. Right now, it sort of does it because it's got turn on from the old receiver programmed, and it turns on the new receiver. But what it doesn't do is switch it in terms of input. So it only works it only works if I was already on that input, which I'm not. Yeah. But like, I feel like I'm perilously close to going down to two remotes, which would be really nice.
The trick with these things is always, I find, the switching between different devices. So like for me, going between the Apple TV and the Xbox, I still, even having used the Harmony for years, I don't have it quite set up right. And sometimes it glitches or whatever. And it turns like the TV off when it's switching, because it's like, oh, you're done. I'm like, yes, but the second step is to turn the TV on.
I actually haven't had that problem with this setup. If I'm on the Apple TV and I want to go to the TiVo, because that's basically the only two things that we're watching on, I press the TiVo button on my little Philips remote, and what it does is say, hey, TV should be on, which it is, and receiver needs to move to this other input. And when it does that, that's it. There. And because the Apple TV is using ARC, if you press the TV button on the Apple TV remote, when it's on the TiVo, basically the Apple TV says, oh, me, activate me. And it switches away from the TiVo to the Apple TV. Yeah. So I can get it to work, which is part of the dream.
The Harmony works pretty well for me still. And actually, weirdly enough, the default thing that we use to turn the TV or the Xbox on is Siri. I think, you know, with the remote's there, but I think my wife sometimes struggles to remember, like, because the buttons are not well labeled, like, which button turns on the Xbox and which button turns on the Apple TV. So Siri is pretty good in that regard, and you can always use the home app if you want to wait through it to turn that on. But it's like, again, it's like, I can see how this should fit together. I just don't it requires a little more outlay than I'm willing to spend at this exact moment, but there is a future insight where I try to simplify things. And right now it's fun because we can each have a remote. So there's warring remote bits,
sure,
rather than having to share a remote. That has its advantages for sure. But yeah, it's not the most simple system.
No, the other thing I'm getting used to is that since it's all linked together, it actually, when I adjust the volume, it shows me on the TV that the volume's being adjusted, and I haven't had that on a TV in a very long time, because it's always been like the receiver just does its own thing surreptitiously, and now it's all like visible, and that's a little bit weird, but it's okay. I'm getting used to it, but I like the idea of trying to move away from having too many remotes. And yes, ultimately, I know what's going to happen here, because ultimately, I'm not going to have the TiVo anymore. But there's still stuff that is only really available with my cable service, and so this is where I am right now. Like, at some point, I'm going to effectively cut the cord, even if I still pay, depending on the pricing and all. Like, because I get a bunch of stuff with my cable subscription that I watch on Apple TV, right? I get HBO Max through having HBO on cable. And I get, you know, all these other things. ESPN, the regular ESPN stuff, is only because I have ESPN on cable. Even though I'm an ESPN Plus subscriber, the ESPN, like, TV stuff, you got to be on TV to get that. So even if I were to, I mean, I've already largely dumped the TiVo. There's very little I watch on it other than live sports and Jeopardy. But I could see that there being a replacement at some point. In fact, if you know, if Comcast would just make an app that like was a DVR and live TV viewer for the Apple TV, I would do that, and then I would be done. But
kind of feels like they have to do that eventually.
Right?
They've been stubborn about it for a long time, and it's not that they don't have the technology, because as we've talked about before, they've written apps for other platforms.
Sure.
They just want to be jerks and not write it for a TV set-top box.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, do they not want to be YouTube TV so that YouTube TV isn't, like, they could compete there, but anyway, it's whatever the reason. I can see that the end is coming for my TiVo, but it's not here yet, and so I had these two devices anyway. It's nice. I didn't have Dolby Atmos. I only had Dolby Digital, so all my surround stuff actually sounds better. It makes me wish I had a 7.1 speaker system, but I don't. I don't.
Yeah.
And I'm not going to put in, like, the whole point of putting the speakers in the ceiling is that I didn't want speakers sitting on top of the piano, and, like, I didn't want that anymore. I wanted them to be kind of invisible. So, but it sounds great. It's got a bunch, I mean, again, you go 15 years without buying any kind of product category, and you are amazed at all the advancement that's happened in 15 years.
Yeah. I mean, as I've said before, I think here, I have a receiver that my dad gave me in high school.
Yeah,
so that's 25 years old. I'm looking at the Arc, and I talked to a bunch of people about it, and they generally seem to be pretty positive. The nice thing for me is I have a couple of Play Ones, which can serve as surround speakers.
Yeah.
The downside is the physical layout of our new living room may make it difficult to position, because the couch will be like in a corner, and it's like, it's not really a great place to put a, like, you know, a Play One is not tiny. You know, I would either need to, like, mount something into the wall, which is not ideal, but it's possible. And then you have, like, either you have to run power through the wall, or you have to, like, you know, just have a cord dangling down, which isn't great either, because the whole point of them is they're wireless. Or there's a possibility where we have, like, maybe an end table in that corner, and then that has a speaker on it,
it
or something. But yeah. I guess I should have thought about putting speakers in before they closed up all the walls. Oh, well, I didn't.
Well,
there's always something. Always something else.
You got your Ethernet cord in there.
I did get my Ethernet cord. That was far more important in the long run. I mean, I've never had surround sound. I'm using two bookshelf speakers that were, are my dad's and are probably 30 years old. But they're fine.
No, that's
they make sound.
That Sonos Arc will be a really nice update for you, a little nice upgrade, I think.
Yeah, I think so. It's really always hard to tell, because the sound stuff is so subjective. You know, and we talked about this a little bit with the spatial audio stuff in Apple Music. But for example, I have on my desk next to my iMac, I have a pair of, I think these are Altec Lansing speakers, that were, actually Dan Frake sent me, because he used to review all the speakers.
Yes,
so
he did.
So I have this, and it's a pretty nice set of speakers, but it's, you know, they're fairly old. And I also have a pair of HomePods, that are in a stereo pair. And frankly, the Altec Lansings, I think, sound nicer than the HomePods, despite all the HomePods sound engineering and everything. They're a lot clunkier, though, right? Like, because they got a ton of wires and there's a big subwoofer down here and all that.
Right.
But, yeah, like, that's the trade-off is like, well, I like the idea of having something simpler and, like, you know, there's a possibility you can use the HomePods right now. I have a stereo pair of HomePods. I could use those as speakers for my Apple TV. You know, there's a lot of possibilities and a lot of options, but then some of it is like you get the stuff that technically is supposed to sound better, but you just don't like the sound as much. Like, yeah. And that's a problem with mics too. I find like I could buy a much nicer mic, but like, well, I like the way my voice sounds with this particular mic. It's not because the mic is more expensive. It's just because the characteristics of the mic work better for my voice. And like,
exactly.
Yeah.
That's
it's frustrating.
A part of it.
Because like, I always want to spend money on stuff. I'm like, yeah, but what if it doesn't actually feel like a better result?
So I have a Sonos Play 5, which is like it's a boombox sort of shaped speaker block. It's big. And I experimented with it having it replace my iPod Hi-Fi, which I'm still using as external speakers. And it's, you know, it's a much better set of speakers than the iPod Hi-Fi. But it's too good. It's got some, because it's a smart speaker, it's got some complexity in terms of like when it's attached to a like a cable, which it would be coming out of my iPad, and like how does it actually process that, and there's some weird glitches that can happen and all that, but like I could work through all of that, but I didn't even bother, because what I discovered is that the speaker sits on my desk. And the Play 5 is too good in that my entire desk just vibrates.
Shit. Yeah, right.
And I can't, it's like too bassy and too rumbly. And I guess I could EQ it and all that. But at that point, like now I no longer have a better sounding speaker. So my current plan, and this is something I haven't written about or talked about anywhere. So I guess, Six Colors exclusive. I'm working on it. I don't know. I just used the breaking news sound there, but I'll work on it. Dun, 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 dun. Six Colors exclusive. How about that?
Exclusive.
What was I saying? Anyway, I am thinking of replacing the iPod Hi-Fi with a paired. So I have a Sonos One, and I actually have a Sonos One and a Sonos Play One.
Okay. Yep.
That can't be used in a stereo pair.
Right, because they're different generations.
Oh, it makes me so angry. So I ordered another Sonos One, because what I'm thinking I'm going to do is I'm going to put Sonos Ones on the far side and near, like the left and the right of my office.
Okay. Yep.
And I'm going to use them for music.
Okay.
That I listen to through the day. I get a really nice stereo separation. They'll be on opposite sides of the room. They sound good. In a stereo good pair, they're going to sound better than the iPod Hi-Fi. Great. However, I will also have to use like the iMac Pro speakers are pretty good for stuff that isn't, I mean, I don't think it's good enough from the music that I enjoying during the day, but they're pretty good. So my idea is I'll use the built-in speakers for sort of everything else, but I'll use the Sonos pair for the music I play in the background. And we'll see how that goes. I'm a little skeptical. However, what's really funny about this is that I ordered that Sonos speaker like 6 weeks ago, and it's still back-ordered until late July. So I don't know what's going on with Sonos. I guess they're having the same legacy nodes that everybody else is having problems with. So that order is just kind of floating out there. But I am thinking of making a move there, because I would like kind of iPod Hi-Fi is fine and all, but I had a moment where I thought I could do better than this, and I do listen to music all day.
Is it just out of curiosity, did you order the One or the One SL with or without speaker or smart?
I ordered the One without.
Yeah, I agree. Because I think that's the right choice.
I already have one. I already have one, and I never use the voice features on that. And if I needed voice features, I'd use it on that. But I don't need to. I don't need to build
their voice. They're bad, though.
It's bad. Maybe they will make a deal. In fact, I wouldn't be surprised if this happens at some point. But the question is, will their existing hardware support it? For Siri support, now that Apple has announced that third-party devices will be able to receive Siri commands. And it does
they
AirPlay
made a
already,
they,
right?
They so. Went to they actually went to Congress and complained about it.
Right.
There was a thing a couple weeks ago where they were like, this is anti-competitive, whatever. Well, and it's like, well,
that's why they used Ecobee in the demo,
right?
Instead,
sure,
I guess.
Yeah.
But
I think I would not be surprised at all to see. I mean, a lot of people, frankly, you know, there was years ago, there was a lot of talk that Apple should have just bought Sonos, and I think you know, there's a strong argument for it. Honestly, I think instead they felt very convinced they could do it on their own, and that was what led to the HomePod. And I think honestly, they should have just bought Sonos.
Yeah, I think if you stuck Sonos inside Apple, like you stuck Beats inside Apple, I think it would have created.
You could have continued
to make Sonos products and also made some Apple products based on the same kind of stuff, which is what they did with Beats.
But they kind of thought, why should we?
We could just replicate this.
Yeah, exactly. And the answer is, you didn't do it as well.
No, and I still think an Apple soundbar would be great. And that's what I was going to say is go ahead and buy that Sonos Arc, Dan, because then you are guaranteeing the release of an Apple soundbar.
There we go. That'll happen.
Thank you very much.
I got to say, I still run into a lot of quirks with AirPlay. Like, it's better than it used to be, but sometimes it just behaves in mysterious, unpredictable ways, and I have zero understanding of why.
Can I tell you my latest AirPlay thing? And this is not on the beta, because my main phone is not on the beta, but this is the thing that happens.
None of mine are beta ones either. Yeah, I agree.
Repeatedly, this happens, where I want to play music, or like play a song because I'm telling a story about like that song to Lauren, and I want to play music, or I'm doing the dishes, or making dinner, or whatever, and I want to put music on the AirPods. And I've got music on my iPhone, and I start it there, and then I go to the AirPlay thing, and I go to the speakers. And, you know, now, listeners, I know what you're thinking. You're expecting me to say, oh, they didn't connect, or it did connect, but there was some sort of frustrating thing that happened where, like, it wasn't right. No, it's better than all of that. It begins playing on the speaker and continues playing on my iPhone, but because of the AirPlay delay in beginning the AirPlay, my iPhone is now playing the same song, continuing to play the same song it already was, but ahead of where the HomePod is, and things sound weird, and I press pause because I want to stop the HomePod from playing the audio, but of course, it doesn't stop the HomePod. It stops the copy of it that's still playing on my phone. And this has happened, like, first time, I'm like, well, that's a weird quirk. It's happened like 3 or 4 times now.
Apple has done this incredibly bizarre thing with AirPlay in recent releases of iOS, especially, where it draws a distinction between sending sound from your phone to an external speaker versus playing something which is essentially handed off so that the speaker is itself playing it.
Right.
And these are two separate control panels. You can tap that button at the bottom that's like control other speakers. And it is, frankly, baffling. And I discovered this in a super weird way when I wrote a post about a while back. I set up an automation to start the radio playing on the Sonos speaker that we have in our bedroom in the morning. And what I discovered after I did that for a while is that when I went to stop it by going to that, like, control other speakers, it's actually playing through the HomePod in the kitchen and then being AirPlayed to the speaker in the bedroom. Because I assumed the automation, which is running at a time, it's not running on the phone. And I'm like, well, I understand why that is happening and why technologically that is what makes sense, but it is completely bizarre to see.
And the two different states leads to this weird situation where
very confusing.
So I get the double playing thing, which is a bug. Obviously, it's a bug. Nobody wants to do that.
I get mismatches in podcasts where like it loses where I am,
right?
Depending on whether it's air playing it or it's playing on the speaker.
So so I get that bug, and it's not, by the way, I'm not setting AirPlay to play also on my speakers synced with my phone. Although I don't know why you do that, but it's not set to do that.
Right.
It's moving it to the speakers and somehow it stays on the phone, but they're separate sessions because I'm not actually streaming it. It's picked it up from me. So then I'm like, no, I don't want to do that. And I press pause and it pauses on my phone. And now my speakers are still going. And I'm like, okay, that's it. The volume's wrong and all of that. So then I tap on the thing that you think is going to switch over so that I can control the HomePod.
Right.
So I can tell the HomePod, you're too loud, or I wanted you to start at the beginning, or that's the wrong song, or whatever. And when I tap on it, it says, something's already playing on the HomePod. Do you want me to replace it with what's playing on this device? Which, by the way, is the same thing that's playing on that device.
Yep, I've had that.
And it's so frustrating. And, like, I get how hard this is. I get when we describe how AirPlay works and how you have these complex states where you've handed it off versus you're streaming there, and that there's this question of, like, you know, they want to add functionality where you have the ability to be streaming something to one device while playing a different thing on yours. The last thing you want is to put music on and then look something up on a recipe website and have the video that autoplays on the recipe website stop the music from playing on the HomePod. Like, no, you don't want that. I get that Apple's trying to be ambitious here and that they've got these multiple states. The UI for this, it's complicated. It's a hard problem to solve. They're not solving it.
Yeah. It took me the longest time to figure out at one point that it does the thing where if you play on multiple speakers, it groups them. And it took me the longest time to figure out that the little, like, carrot next to them, I could not figure out how to ungroup them. And you have to tap, there's a little carrot. And so, the problem was, I think in some versions, the glyph would get, like, a little merged into, like, the speaker. So it almost looked like part of the speaker icon. I was like, how do I stop this? I don't know. And finally, somebody pointed out, you tap that and it re-expands it. And I was like, okay, fine. But the audio stuff in general, I've had a lot of problems with recently. I have this recurring thing with my AirPods now where my phone does not believe my AirPods belong to me. And I have literally no idea how to fix this because I've reset it several times and it's still, I have to go into the Bluetooth settings. I've had multiple times in the last week where I go into the AirPlay thing being like, my AirPods didn't auto pair. Fine. Right. And I'll go into the little AirPlay menu and the AirPods won't even be there. And I'm like, what is happening? And then I have to go to the Bluetooth menu in settings, tell it to pair. And then for a while, it was really freaking out and wouldn't even pair with them. So I reset the entire thing. And I think the trick was I had to go around. And even though it claims if you forget the AirPods on this device, it'll forget them on all of your devices. iCloud being iCloud. No, it didn't. It just deleted them from that device. So I had to go around to like all my other devices and manually remove them. And I was like,
forget about these. I had a good moment in the kitchen the other day. Because again, working in the kitchen, I put in my AirPods. It's great. Where I popped my AirPods in and playback and I was playing a podcast. And playback began, and my right ear received the podcast, and my left ear received music from some device previously connected. It unpaused it and started playing, and so I had left ear playing music, right ear playing podcast. I was like, no, and then I squeezed the earbud to pause the podcast, and it paused. The music continued to play. Yep. And I had to put them back in the case, close it, wait, take a few breaths, open it back up, and then it played fine. I also have the handoff thing that happens a lot where I'm playing music on my phone and I'm working and like I hit a particular web page or something that's got media in it and my AirPods are like, boop, I'm not going to play music anymore. I'm going to let you listen. It's like, yes, this is a feature, but also I'm listening to music now. I don't want random sounds to switch from the iPhone to the iPad. Please stop. And I know there's a setting to make it stop, but that makes connecting to these devices more complex. Yes, so
right. My is favorite hard, is still, we sometimes, I'll be recording a podcast and Kat will be in the living room and she wants to watch something on TV. And I'm like, all right, you can borrow the AirPods and pair them to the TV. Sometimes I'll get on the podcast and as soon as she puts in the AirPods, they'll pair with the iMac. She'll get the podcast audio. So all of a sudden, you know, she's talking to Lex and John Maltz. And I'm being oh God, I can't hear anything. What's happening? It is one of those cases where Apple has tried to make this stuff very smart. And again, they've tried to anticipate these things and the idea. And when it works really nicely. But the problem is it feels like a house of cards. And it feels like if you just do something wrong, like I swear I think about half of these AirPods problems came from the fact that at some point I let Kat borrow my AirPods and pair them with her phone. And that was a mistake. I think that screwed up a whole ton of stuff. And I have no idea quite how to escape from that whirlpool I've found myself in. But it's just like, we just did one thing that Apple was like, well, why would you do that? And it's like, well, you didn't think about every single possible case. You thought about the ideal working case in your scenario. And people don't do the ideal stuff all the time. They do stupid things. That's frustrating is when it's just like removing one of the Jenga pieces. It just causes the whole thing to fall down.
Yeah. Yeah. But it's anyway, so to close that parenthetical and the next one, working under the waterline, which I mentioned 25 minutes ago. I was working on my Mac OS, presumably public beta, right? Like, so I write a Mac OS review every year. And the way it's been the last few years is that what I've done is I've written a public beta preview review kind of thing. And then that also serves as kind of the raw material or a first draft of what I will write again and edit and change in the fall when the final version comes out. What it means is that there's an intense period of time where you're working on it right at the beginning. And that article is full of like, oh, this doesn't make sense, or I hope they fix this. And then at the end, you take things out. And, you know, it's always kind of a pleasant surprise where you go through the whole summer and then you're editing that story and you're checking all those things. And you're like, oh, they did fix this. Look at that. And you take that stuff out and you put in other observations and thoughts that you've had. But anyway, I wrote like 1,300 words, maybe more than that, yesterday that will hopefully appear whenever the public beta shows up. Now, Mac OS didn't even get a beta 2. iOS and iPad OS got a beta 2 yesterday. There's none yet visible for Mac OS. So, you know, I don't think the public beta releases are imminent because, you know, they haven't even released a Mac, a second Mac beta. And I think betas tend to be the first public betas. So
that seems to be the way it's been in the past. Yeah.
Yeah. So anyway, that's happening in the background. And it's one of those things where when you kind of work as visibly as we do in terms of our writing, where it tends to just go up within a day of us writing it or two, this is it's funny when this kind of stuff happens. But because, you know, like Federico is writing his iOS review now.
Oh, sure. Yeah.
Nobody's going to read that until September.
I had the flip side experience this week where I was reading a piece that you wrote and over at Macworld, and it made me think. I was like playing around with the beta on my iPad as I was like thinking about the stuff that you were talking about, and I had a thought.
Okay.
And I was like, oh, I just put this up. I just went and did it right there too, which is like, that's the opposite experience where it's like, did I think about this at all? No, I did think about it, but I didn't. It wasn't a long gestating thing. It was sort of like an idea that struck me, and I was like, oh, I think this is interesting. I think there's an interesting point here. It's kind of a weird point, but I think it's worth thinking about.
Yeah, well, your point was that the multitasking, like little three-dot thing that comes out with those glyphs, like that this is a nudge to developers because, like on the iPad, like it's there whether you support multitasking or not, but it's like the idea of supporting windowing on the Mac is, unless you're a game, basically it's like, well, yeah, you're going to support windowing on the Mac. And it seems like they're doing that on the iPad, which is like, no, this is part of the iPad.
I think it goes hand in hand with what you were writing about, sort of that future potentially hanging out there for the iPad where it, like, you know, becomes maybe a little more Mac-like or has capabilities that are closer to the Mac in terms of how it does multitasking and windowing. And, you know, I had that sneaking suspicion feeling like this is something Apple has done in the past, right? Mm-hmm. With like different size screen layouts. It's like, well, if you use, I can't remember what the framework is called, but like there were whatever the UI layout stuff that they do where when they added a different screen size, it's like, well, if you're using like the flexible layouts things or whatever, it's like you get this for free, right? Like this already happens. You're in good shape. And it kind of occurred to me like this seems like very much like a thing they would do in the future where it's like, well, if you're already, you know, implementing the split view and slide over options, then you're set, right? Like all these options are free for you and like everything will work. And if you're not, well, maybe you should be doing that. And it is certainly telling when you go and look at apps now that do not support any sort of split view or slide over capability. When again, it feels like they could, right? I mean, in so many cases, slide over is very similar to like you have an iPhone app, don't you? It's basically just your iPhone app. So, you know, just do that.
The glyphs that you pointed out too, that like SF symbols, the, you know, symbols that Apple provides to developers and uses itself. So there's sort of a consistent symbology across its platforms. They have a whole bunch of these sort of window location things, and they're used on iOS and they're used on the Mac. And, they could easily add more.
In fact, third parties, I think, so I had to disable, I use occasionally Moom by our friend, old friend Rob Griffiths, which, and if that hijacks that sort of that full screen menu, and it gives you a bunch of other options, include like tile it on the bottom or tile it on the top, and it has the same glyphs for all of those. And it was like, yeah, those are clearly in there. So
and I think Moom is an interesting example of like a utility, and there are others like it where it's like trying to do tiling. Microsoft is really aggressively doing
snaps layouts or whatever.
Yeah, in Windows 11, like it and when I did my mock up of the iPad, and it's showing floating windows. And like, I think floating windows are actually good. I think floating windows are okay. I think you're letting the user decide. And I had somebody yesterday say, but no, because something could get hidden under something else. It's like, well, that happens on the Mac too. And you have an affordance to you tap on the dock and all the windows come forward. Like, there are lots of ways that you could deal with it. But yes, I'm open to the possibility that one of the things that Apple's trying to think about, if it's thinking, how do we get iPad stuff on a big monitor, which, you know, I don't know about the details, but like, it's got to be that they're going to let you control apps directly on a big monitor at some point, because why would you support external displays just for like video preview? It seems bananas to me. But they may not do free floating windows. I think that there's nothing wrong with that, and they should have a free floating mode. But whether or not they offer that, I think you look at what Microsoft has done, you look at stuff like Moom, you start to think about like, well, what, how could you do a version of split view or slide over that was a little bit more flexible for a larger display? And yeah, you know, there are ways to do snapping and tiling and stuff like that that would be fine, whether it's the only way you do it or whether I think the better way to do it is to let people have free-floating windows but also have these controls to have them snap and tile so that they don't. Because, you know what stinks about free-floating windows is when you want to see a bunch of different things at once and you have to precisely move everything and shape everything so that they all are visible. Like, that is why utilities like Moom are great, because you can just say, no, I want this over there and this over there and I'm done.
Yeah. I use it for TPK when I'm live streaming, right? Because I have like five apps open I need to be able to see all of those things. So I have like a layout saved where I can just hit it and it's like, yep, move the Zoom window here, move the Chrome window here, move, you know, the live stream software over here. And like, it's nice. It's just like, but even then, it's stuff is overlapping, right? Because I don't have space for all those windows in their full sizes.
Exactly.
It just isn't possible.
That's what I was going to say, is that one of the hidden benefits of having overlapping windows is that, which is, I know that it's there and I can see some of it. I don't need to see everything in Audio Hijack, but I do want to see that it's running and the time that's on it. I don't need to always see the video streaming app Wirecast that I use for Dungeons and Dragons on the internet, right? But I do need to keep an eye on it, right? Like, part of it. I don't need to see the whole UI until the moment when I need to alter it. And by doing overlapping windows, you as the user have the ability to prioritize, but also have the flexibility to, like, it's kind of in the background, but I can keep my eye on it. And that's, we talked about this a few weeks ago. One of the fundamental problems with iOS and iPadOS right now is apps, like, if you can't see it, you can't trust that it exists.
Yeah, right.
And that's not good. That's not good for pro workflows. If you want to have like the fact that when I export audio from Logic on my Mac, I start the export and I go do other things. And when I export that audio from Ferrite on an iPad, I sit there and let Ferrite run because I'm afraid it will mess up if I leave it.
Fear is not a great thing to have in your workflow. You should eliminate that. You should get rid of fear in your workflow.
Thank you.
That's what you should be doing.
That's a deep thought. I feel like this. You're making me into a workflow ninja now. Fear is the mind killer.
It's usually the kind of thing that we keep for like when we're on an elevator for 4 hours.
Yeah.
Kind of
reference acknowledged. Anyway, so I'm working on macOS stuff, and I'll probably do more of that today, and someday it will appear. I have a scripting update.
Oh, okay. All right.
I've been learning to do more with Python because I wanted to learn a more modern scripting language. And I've written about the fact that I used a big Apple script to generate our newsletter every week. I did last week. I rebuilt the whole thing in Python, which was fun. It also means I can run it on our server and it can just run there instead of running on the Mac in my office every week. Mm-hmm. It was a good learning experience. It was great. However, I did it wrong. And so the newsletter didn't go out. And I had to change the time the newsletter goes out to 1 hour later and then run the old script and then it went out and all of that. So hopefully it will go out this week using the Python version. It turns out that I copied over all of the like search and replace kind of stuff that I do in my script in order to get it to look better in the newsletter. And but the input for those searches and replaces was slightly different because of my method of pulling data out of our RSS feed was slightly different in Python rather than Apple Script. Less, actually simpler, but it led to slightly different output. So I had to live and learn. I realized I missed a step, which is that after I did all the initial parsing, I should have just output what it looked like and compared it to what the Apple Script looked like. And I would have said, oh, no. No, they're not the same. That's not good. But anyway, live and learn. But that's been a fun experience. I got BBEdit set up with like a Python language server and some auto completion stuff, and I learned how to do syntax checking on Python. And that has been a fun experience. As my wife told me, you know, important thing in doing crossword puzzles is great, but doing crossword puzzles doesn't keep your mind sharp. Learning new things keeps your mind sharp, and I want to keep learning new things, so I'm learning Python.
I've always been tempted by it. I've dabbled very slightly in it, but
it's good.
Good. And I have friends who are like, that's what they did, right? They were professional Python developers, and like,
sure.
You know, I worked in PHP for a long time, and I just use it because it's like a language I know. But I understand everything that Python has to offer. Well, I just don't have a lot of opportunity to use it for this.
Well, right. I mean, and my PHP bootcamp was the Six Colors site redesign because it's WordPress and WordPress uses PHP. But I just had this thought of like, well, it would be interesting to learn a modern scripting language. And I bring out, for me, it was really like AppleScript. I can hack away at stuff in AppleScript and make it work. But that newsletter was a great example of something that's like, why did I use AppleScript? And the answer is it was the tool in my arsenal. So
sure.
I used it. Tool in the tool chest. I should have better tools in the tool chest. So it's been fun. I have spent enough time in the last year or two with PHP and JavaScript and Python, along with AppleScript, to have formed slight opinions about about different languages, and you know, enough for me to say I think Python is very sensible and I like it and I appreciate it. Not saying anything about those other languages. I just in terms of learning something new, I see what it's trying to do,
and it's approachable.
I kind of appreciate it, and I don't have to put semicolons at the end of every line, and I love that. So anyway, that's been fun. And with any luck, this week's Six Colors Weekly newsletter will go out based on the Python script and not based on my old Apple script. But we'll see. We'll see if it goes out, and we'll see if it has weird things in it. I checked the output. They look pretty much identical now, so it should be no different. And I found several bugs in recoding from Apple script into Python. I found several places in the Apple script where I'm like, why does it do that? And it's a mistake. It shouldn't do that. So that was also very educational for me.
It's good. It is good to learn new things. I agree.
Did you have something else?
Oh, I was just going to say that in the background, I've been playing around with Big Mail, which I know a lot of people have opinions about.
Right. New mail app.
Yep, and I'm very intrigued by it. I've sort of temporarily replaced it, although I did much better yesterday with not having mail open at the same time, and then I discovered a few things that require me to feel like I still need mail open at the same time just to sort of sanity check myself. But I like a lot of what it's doing. I don't think it would replace mail for me, but I think there's a lot for Apple to learn, and that's the thing that's the most important about it, because Mail is a program that has not, I think we've talked about this before, and it's been talked about many places, hasn't changed in a super long time. And there are better ways to deal with email now, and it is kind of a shame that Apple, including its own, you know, default mail client, means that it's a real uphill climb for competitors, and they have very little impetus to change things, right? And like, that also kind of goes to the antitrust stuff that's being bandied about a bit now in terms of bundling apps. You know, if Apple's Mail app was on a similar footing with a lot of other you know, third parties, that might change the equation a little bit. But it has certainly its share of downsides coming with that. So long way of saying, yeah. I think Big Mail has some interesting stuff going for it. I don't think that it will necessarily kick mail down for me just because of convenience stuff, but there is definitely stuff for Apple to learn from that and from other more modern mail clients.
I'm disappointed. One of the things that I'm actually writing about, if I have enough time in my macOS thing, and if not, I'll save it for the big one in the fall, is the stuff that doesn't get updated. It's so easy to focus on the stuff that does get updated that it's worth like spending a moment saying like, why haven't they made moves in these places? And mail is one of those where
calendar is the other one.
Well, I mean, and I use Fantastical, and then I go back to calendar and I'm like, nope. The mail, it's such a missed opportunity. And mail is in many ways the oldest app. Like, I know it's probably been rewritten a bunch of times, but it's basically, its heritage is the next mail client because Steve Jobs loved it and said, I want this on the Mac. Like, if I'm going to use this Mac OS X thing, I need my mail client there. But like, it's a very old way of viewing email.
Yeah. Yep.
And I think Big Mail suggests that the challenge is, if you try to reinvent email, you often end up with a very specific take on how to use email. And that was my challenge with Big Mail, is that I opened it and I was like, no, I don't use my email like this. No, I'm not going to do it. Mm-hmm. And I've in a situation now where I'm using Gmail, but with Sanebox, which does a bunch of auto-filtered stuff and trainable auto-filters.
That's the thing that it comes down to, I think, for me, is sort of the nut of what I'm taking away from this is the best thing Big Mail does is not have you look at your email client constantly and like sort of do some of that signal to noise filtering for you where it's like, this is the stuff you care about and this is the stuff you don't care about and this is the stuff you'll check when you have time.
And all of that
stuff could be done in mail without turning it into a, you have to use your mail client this way.
Yeah. Like the way I'm using it, and again, Sanebox at one point was a sponsor of a podcast that I did, but I actually don't remember how long ago it was. But you know, by doing auto filtering, it has its own, and you can make custom ones and all that kind of stuff. But what I don't look at my email very often, and in fact, when I'm at my desk, mostly when I look at it is when I get an email in my inbox. Because it's very rare that that happens, right? Like mostly with what Sanebox does and what a bunch of these other email services like Hey and all that, they're trying to get your email out of your way. There's a later folder that's like, this is not something you need to see right now. So they put it in the later folder for you to have a moment where you say, I'm going to look at my mail, not I need to deal with this right now. It's an immediate interrupt. And email's not as important as it used to be, but I feel like, I'm sure that Apple has struggled with this, and it may be that they are making a decision not to do this, or it may be that they can't decide what to do, or that there's just not enough resource being given to them to do it. But like, I feel like there's a place for Apple to be in here, which is to say we're not gonna have an opinionated way that everybody should do their mail, but we can do some prioritization and training. We can pull, like, the direction they're going with messages, like having the ability to say sort of like, we can pull kind of meta information out of your email and say, here are your calendar invites and here are here are your newsletters, and we're going to pop them into Apple News and a new newsletters thing that comes out of your email. Like, there's so many kind of integration things they could do, and snoozing mail and all of the stuff that like has been talked about for 10 years or more in making email a little bit more actively managed. And I'm surprised that Apple has made zero effort there, other than that they just changed the email plugin format.
Yes, they
which
did.
Which does make me wonder if something is going on in the background that ultimately leads to maybe a new version of mail that maybe is across all the platforms, and that maybe once they're
there, a little more like groundwork, essentially.
And maybe that's why they haven't done anything else here, is because they're
it's
like
the most charitable explanation.
We can't do that until we redo mail.
Right. We can't. I mean, we could be sitting around patching a bunch of hammering little things to cover up the holes in mail, or we could kind of tear it down to the studs and decide it needs a better approach in this day and age. And maybe they're doing that, and that takes longer, and that's fine. But
that
we
new
don't
plugin
know because
is a red flag to me, where it's like, okay, wait a second. That probably means it's going to happen on iPad and iPhone 2 at some point. And that probably means they're moving to some sort of shared idea of what mail is. I sure hope so, because
I use
Apple Mail on my iPad and my iPhone. I only use Gmail in Mailplane, which is now discontinued, which is really sad, on the Mac. I use Apple Mail on iOS, and it's fine, because that's partially because I'm using SaneBox, which is doing all the filtering for me. So it's pre-filtered when I see it. But I don't know. They it feels like a real missed opportunity on Apple's part to do email better on their platforms.
I feel that way about Calendar as well. I mentioned this, but like, you know, they added tags in Reminders and Notes in iOS 15 and macOS 15. And I'm like, I need tags in Calendar. I need tags in Calendar so badly. I need anything to be improved in Calendar, because I just have these, like, you know, fantastic out. It's great. I'm glad there are third-party competitors. But again, Apple has taken this as an opportunity to just be like, let's literally, I mean, I don't think Calendar has been updated in years. I don't think, because like there's nothing new in there. There may be some improvements in terms of like, I don't know, like some of the stuff it can pull out of your email or whatever, but like the app itself has barely changed. And especially from a functionality standpoint, it has maybe changed a little bit from like a, you know, UI / aesthetic appearance to mesh with the rest of the system, but it doesn't do anything better than Calendar from 5 years ago did, which is a shame. Because again, it's a place that really needs to be better, and other competitors have showed how that can be, and that's good. But it also feels like Apple should at least, you know, raise its game a little bit. Doesn't have mean it's going to match what the third parties are doing, but like, don't just leave it fallow for 5 years and expect people to just be like, well, it's on the system by default, so people will use it. That's not a good reason.
Not a good enough reason. Yeah. So maybe this is our last point today, but all this legislation about like, oh, we're going to stop big tech. It's like, okay, here's the problem with that. I see the argument that what you really, you know, if Apple makes a calendar app, then what it's doing is it's making it impossible for anyone else to sell a calendar app. Not impossible, because Fantastical has a whole
very
thing.
Very difficult.
But like, it makes it harder. It makes it harder, because if you buy your phone and there's no calendar on it, you're like, what the hell? I need a calendar. And then you're going to go look for a calendar. The challenge that Apple has, and this is why I roll my eyes when people talk about Sherlocking, is Apple's goal here is to create a pretty good experience out of the box, right? Yeah, like their goal is not to make products that are super fiddly. And that's why I think the argument about the email client is probably like, oh, snoozing, that's a fiddly thing. That's a third party opportunity. But the problem is that there is a base level that is part of the fundamental value of the operating system. And there is a bunch of people who will never use anything but the base apps that Apple provides. Yep. And they should be better. However, when we advocate for them being better, the answer is also sort of that we're saying to the people who make the alternatives that they need to, what has been true for the last, I don't know, 30 years, which is they got to stay in front of what Apple's doing in order to provide that extra value that allows them to have a customer that goes above and beyond. But you see the push and pull here is like, we want them to make Calendar better. But at the same time, the argument is, well, that's evil. They should not even make a calendar, or it should have to compete with developers or something.
But you know, if you argue that the third party needs to make their calendar better, well, like now we've entered into competition. I mean, granted, Apple has a lot more resources, but their resources are much more divided because they're doing way more things than a company that's just building a calendar app or just building a mail app.
And they, as the owners of the platform, I would argue that they have they should have the right to set the floor for what the platform experience is. And that is going to sometimes mean adding features to your base apps in order for them to be better.
Right.
And that's going to make everybody scream Sherlock. Sure. And, you know, I get that. But like the goal, Apple is never going to, your point, never going to be like, all right, we're going to take Fantastical out. We're going to just do everything that they're doing. Like that is unlikely to ever happen, right? Because like, Wouldn't it be nice, actually, from a not for Fantastical, but like, whoa, look at this new calendar app. It's so full featured. But Apple's kind of never going to do that. Apple, in many categories, shows a tremendous amount of restraint. They got all the money. They could spend a huge amount of money and completely rethink calendaring. And they're like, eh, we just need it to be good enough for people out of the box and then provide a third-party opportunity. But they do need to make it better from time to time. And when they are lacking in that category is when we notice, I think.
Right. And it's tough because it is then like, well, this is the free thing that's bundled with everything. So, you know, are people ever going to be even know that the better alternatives exist sometimes? And it also, you know, I think, again, the places where the playing field is important to level is the places where still, you know, there are leg ups for Apple's own built-in apps in certain places, right? Like the places where you can and can't set default apps for things. It's like, that's a place that needs to be leveled, because that's what keeps a lot of people on those default apps, is the fact that it's so tightly tied into the operating system that even if you get a third-party app, it doesn't work as well.
Look at this Falls feature, which is this shared view thing where if stuff comes in messages, it knows what data types those are, and it exposes them in other places, in photos and in where else does it go, and news and Safari, right? Like all these places. And my immediate thought when I saw that was, what's the third party developer story? And the answer was, there seems to not be one, and they announced this at a developer conference for their new OS, and there's no story there. And that's one of those examples of like, well, one way Apple could be better. And I get that, like, you're introducing it, and maybe it's step one, introduce it in our apps. Step two, offer an API. But like, you could build that system with an API that your apps use, and then you let other app developers use it, right? Because if there's a system wide, somebody sent you an invitation, and any calendar app can subscribe to get all the invitations that are processed by the system, or, you know, whatever your example is, or all the links that go from Safari or Apple News. Like some other app could also subscribe to those links, and NetNewsWire could have a from other places, you know, for you kind of thing built in. That's the part where you look at it and you say, well, this is how Apple could change its behavior, is to say, I'm not building features just for us, we're building them for the platform, and we're the ones we're testing this on. But then you can write it right to that API too. And sometimes they do that, and sometimes they don't.
Indeed. Yeah. And so, yes, sometimes they're a lot better about sharing than others.
I think generally they're better than they've been in a while about it, but it's still not, we're not at the end of the line for that. All right. Well, next week we'll be back. Maybe there'll be betas of macOS. Maybe there'll be public betas. Who knows? But
anything could happen.
That's right. It's a week, 7 days. Anything could happen. You could travel back in time and try to avert. That was a TV show, right? 7 days where the guy traveled back in time 7 days.
God, Anthony LaPaglia.
Wow. Yeah, that's right. I like.
Why do I know that?
Short-term time travel, I think, is a fun idea. Where it's like, you know. Phil Michaels and I used to have a recurring comedy in quotes that we would do, which is the short-term time traveler, where he'd be like, the smaller your window, the less opportunity you have to change things. So at very small windows, it becomes things like, don't eat that sandwich. It's not going to agree with you. So that's about all I could do, because I only went back 5 minutes in time. So sorry.
Still pretty good.
So 7 days from now, everything could change. Or is that a New York minute? I don't know. Anyway, bye, Dan.
Bye, Jason.